Welcome to Your Career Doctors on Grapevine Radio. I'm your host, Barbara Jackson.
And I'm Lee Miller. And we're Your Career Doctors.
Your Career Doctors is all about taking control of your career.
It's about providing you with the information, contacts, skills, and tools you need, both on the show and on our website, yourcareerdoctors.com.
It's also about providing access to experts like our guest today, Don Asher. Lee, why don't you introduce Don?
Donald Asher has been referred to as America's job search guru. He is a writer and a speaker, and he's the author of The Overnight Resume and Asher's Bible of Executive Resumes and How to Write Them. Welcome, Don.
Thanks so much, Lee and Barbara.
Well, thanks for being our guest, and tell me, what is the key to writing a great resume?
The key to writing a great resume is understanding who your reader is. So I have this theory that on the inside of the eyelids of every manager in America is the following sentence: what can this candidate do for me? And if you can't answer that, you're not ready to write the resume.
So every resume has to be tailored.
It's got to be tailored and customized. And you just can't use the resume. A lot of people approach it as, I'm going to write about me. Don't write about you. Write about what they want to see in you.
Good. Now, what should a good resume include?
Well, it should include your accomplishments more than your routine duties. I don't care if you worked on a dock. You can talk about how you organized the dock better, or I always tell this funny joke. I mean, if you had a 10-inch broom and you requisitioned a 12-inch broom, you created a 20% increase in efficiency.
That's a good one. Now, how should, when you start thinking about, I'm going to write a resume, what should you start? What's your first step in writing that resume?
Well, the first step is to visualize the job that you want, and to visualize somebody performing in that job. What kind of skills would they need? What kind of activities would they perform? Who would they interact with? What would they dress like? What kind of accomplishments would they need to achieve on a daily basis and weekly basis? They have to see that person performing in that job. And then they have to ask themselves, how much of what I have done would be relevant to that job? So it all starts with imagining the job that you want. And then after you get done imagining the job that you want, then you go through your skills and your experiences and identify those skills and experiences that would best indicate that you're ready to do that job.
So it's like visualizing that perfect golf shot, huh?
You got to visualize it before you hit it.
Okay. Now, what's an overnight resume?
An overnight resume is a resume you can do in one night, and I think people agonize too much on their resumes. They you can do in one night. So I designed that book, The Overnight Resume, so you could sit down at 5 p.m., but before you go to sleep, you've got your resume, you're ready for tomorrow's interview, or you're ready for tomorrow's application.
Okay. Now, I've heard the term functional resume. What is that, and what do you think of that?
Functional resumes, well, there's two main different types of resume, the functional and the chronological. In the chronological, you describe each job in its own little paragraphs. But in the functional, you combine experiences from different jobs under heading categories, such as sales experience, management experience, human resources experience. And the efficiency of the functional resume is that you can get all, let's say you had experience in 8 different jobs that had to do with human resources, but you were never called the human resources manager. Then you can put human resources experience, pull the experiences out of those 8 jobs, and put them at the top of your resume if you were applying for a human resources job. The problem
I can tell you, though, when I was the head of HR, and I was the head of HR at a couple companies, whenever I got a functional resume, I always asked the first question that came to my mind is, what's this candidate covering up here?
Exactly. That's the problem with them. The problem with them is that when people see them, the first thing they think is, what's the scam? And the reason is because too many people use this structure to hide problems and to overstate their background. They might say, supervised staff of 8. And then they come in for an interview, you find out you're talking about 8 paper boys, and it was 25 years ago.
Okay, so how do you kind of get around that issue, or just simply never use a functional resume?
Well, I don't really use functional resumes very much. Because if you're really clever, you can solve all the same problems without resorting to that methodology.
Okay, well, tell me how you do that.
Well, it depends on what the problem is. Let's say you haven't worked in 18 months. And then the solution to that is to use a regular chronological resume, but it's called the open tombstone method. You might say your last job was 2000, and then you put a dash, and you don't put the date that it closes. So a person could infer that you're either still employed there, and it just removes the closing date, which could be a year ago, even 2 years ago. So that's a solution. But there's a basket of tricks that one learns from writing resumes over and over again that allow you to solve those kind of problems.
Okay. Well, how important is a cover letter?
Cover letter is used mostly to route the resume. If your cover letter, I always say there should be nothing in the cover letter that's so important that it should have been on the resume. But the cover letter routes the resume. So if there's a job code in an announcement, you have to use that job code. If there's language in the ad that you can put in your cover letter, then you certainly should do that. But I think cover letters are mostly overrated. They need to be grammatically perfect because that's the first time someone is looking at your work. If you've got a couple of mistakes in your cover letter, that bodes very poorly for you.
Yeah, I've kind of heard different things about it. I never paid much attention to cover letters, but some people have told me that you really want to hit them with something in the cover letter to get their attention.
Well, sometimes that is a good technique where you might say highlights or just bang, bang, a couple of things that are directly relevant to the job ad. But in general, I think of the cover letter as a routing slip.
Okay. Now, if you've been out of the workforce, as you said, say raising a family or doing something more personal, going back to school or something, how should you handle that in the resume?
Well, reentry is a very interesting career process. Reentry is fascinating to me because the problem it turns up to be the same for prisoners and housewives, which you don't usually find prisoners and housewives in the same category. But when it comes to reentry, you have to account for that missing 3 to 15 years. So how do you do it? One of the best ways to do it is, this is not a resume answer, it's really a career management answer. Sometimes a person has to slide back into their career by doing a little volunteer work or by taking some temporary assignments or even taking a lower level position than they want. And currently people are calling this surfing, but I actually think of it as bouncing. You come back into the workforce under one of these contingent methods, and then you've got recent stuff to put on your resume.
So that gives you that current entry.
You've got a current entry. And once you have a current entry, people don't pay tons of attention to the dates on the prior materials. You can even divide a resume up where you say current assignment, and you go on and on about the current assignment. Then you say prior assignments, and there's no more dates. And that's
okay.
A way of getting rid of this. Now, all of this is simply resume stuff. This is not... I want to be very clear about this for the listeners. You're not fibbing about your background. Never, never, never tell a lie in a resume. You're simply trying to use the resume to get the interview going. In the interview, you have to be very forthcoming. If somebody's interviewing you and they think you're hiding stuff, well, you are dead in the water.
All right, exactly. And that's what the resume is all about, right? Getting that interview, right?
The resume really does five different things. It gets you the interview in tough competition. Okay, whether it's on the online, through a website, or whether it's a paper resume, there's always competition. So it gets you the interview. Then it structures the interview. Everybody uses the resumes to interview you. They're going to walk right through your background. Then the third thing it does, it reminds the interviewer of you later. And it turns out I have some psychological research that shows this is a very powerful function of the resume. If your resume is great, even if you did poorly in the interview, they will over time, they will remember you as great. If your resume is poor and you did great in the interview, over time, they will remember you as kind of unkempt and poor.
Okay.
The fourth thing that it does is it justifies the hiring decision to third parties, people that were not even involved in hiring you. So sooner or later, they have to say, well, here's the person we're going to take. And someone says, well, let me see his resume. There's an upstairs function to the resume, and that's frequently overlooked. And then finally, it really helps you to prepare for your job search and prepare for your interviews, because doing a good resume causes you to do a self-assessment and to be ready for that interview.
Now, what do you think about posting a resume online?
Well, everybody does it now. The fact is that people are doing it full-time. While they still have a position, they're doing it. And there's a couple things people are doing. I don't want to get too involved in the ethics of this because I'm unsettled on it myself. They're using a fake name, or they'll use their first and middle name. And they'll use a cell phone, and they'll remove the address, and they will use a guise for their current employer. For example, instead of saying IBM, they might say a major technology company.
Well, trust me, that's very important, because when I was head of HR, Well, I had our recruiters going online to see which of our employees were out looking for a job so I could be prepared to fill their jobs.
Absolutely, and everybody does this. And so only an unwise person, a truly foolish person, would post their resume without disguise if they're currently employed. If they're not employed, then, of course, you list all this stuff. And, of course, anyone putting their resume online needs to know that the resumes are searched. There's a freshness function. So you have to change your resume a lot so that you show up that you're active in your search. Okay. And it doesn't matter what you change. You can change your phone number from cell phone to home. It doesn't matter what you change. You change
so periodically
all,
you need to
you
change your resume.
The
are there any other things you need to do differently online than in kind of hard copy resumes?
There is. It's important when you're making an online resume to focus on keywords that the persons may use to search. So keywords, when you're doing a paper resume, there's the element of the design, if it looks right, if they like your background, the human response is a major factor. But when you're applying online, if they're looking for someone with the statistics packages of SPSS, if you don't have SPSS in your resume, that exact term, you're not going to get a hit.
So keyword searching, very important tip. Now, what you say you send in a resume, either because you know a job's open or you see an ad, and you don't hear back from the organization, what should you do?
Well, you should call to see what the status of that placement effort is. I'm a big fan of placing the resume in the context of a sophisticated job search strategy and technique. Too frequently, people want to hide behind their resume. So a sophisticated technique, if I learned that Company X was hiring a cost accountant, I'd go to the website and I'd fill out the forms and I would turn it in on the website. I would mail it directly to the person that I thought might be doing that hiring inside that company. I'd ask all my friends if they knew anyone at that company. I'd go to the company's website and look up the officers and send the resume to those officers with a note that said, I heard you were looking for a cost accountant. Who would I talk to about that? I would use multiple approaches. And I would always call to follow up. I sent in my resume last week. I'm wondering if you had any questions. I'm wondering if you're going to be able to schedule appointments.
Okay. Don, is there one big mistake that people commonly make when they're doing resumes?
Well, the biggest mistake they make is lying. 25% of management resumes have an outright lie on them. And HR managers know this, and they're looking for those lies. And they'll be caught, and when they're caught, they'll be, you know, summarily dismissed if they're already hired, or they'll be discounted if they're in the process of the selection. So that's the biggest possible mistake you could make. It's foolish, it's dumb, it's not needed.
Well, Don, I just want to thank you. We could go on for hours because you are full of information, and maybe we'd have you back again. Is that possible?
Oh, I would love it.
Well, that'd be swell, but our listeners can go and learn more about Don's resume philosophy and resume tactics by going to our website, yourcareerdoctors.com, and Don's books are there. You can click on them, and it'll shoot you over to Amazon.
You can buy both any of his 9 books, actually.
And know why he's the guru. But right now, we're going to take a short break to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Too many women lack access to political power, economic resources, and a voice in decisions affecting their lives. For 34 years, the Ms. Foundation for Women has been working to strengthen women's economic and political power, especially the power of low-income women and women of color. The Ms. Foundation for Women is the women's foundation engaged nationally to build women's power to drive social change. Through grant-making and practical training, we are working to create a true democracy of equity and inclusion, a democracy in which every woman and girl is valued and every voice is heard, a democracy in which women at the margins of our society have a seat at every decision-making table and work alongside men in every sphere of life. The Ms. Foundation for Women, changing the way the world works.
As a professional trainer, I found that there are 5 basic learning styles. The computer-based training from Macau works on all 5. With Macau training, you don't just watch a movie or read a manual. You access videos, examples, and exercises as you need them. You can use Macau courses to improve your management skills or to become an expert at your computer software. To find out how to achieve more with Macau training, call us at 877-752-5000. 8775529. That's 877-752-5329. Or visit McCalCorp.com today. www.McCalCorp.com. McCal creates training that works. It's that simple.
Welcome back to Your Career Doctors on Grapevine Radio. I'm your co-host, Barbara Jackson, and I'm here with Lee Miller. Lee, that was a great interview with Don. And, you know, like yourself, I have several resumes that I provide to those who request them, and I'd like to think that they do answer the question that he said was in the back of every interviewer's eyelid. And I just found his advice really interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure our listeners found it very helpful as well. I was reminded by Don how important it is that resumes, like all aspects of looking for a job, need to be tailored to the specific employer that you want to get that interview with.
And that the resumes are really about what they want to hear. And so often we think that they're really about hyping ourselves, which they are, but in the context of what the interviewer is looking for. And in fact, you know, I was struck over the Christmas holidays, I was watching a really popular movie with my young nieces who are in high school. And in this movie, the heroine hands out her resume, and it was pink and it was scented. And I thought, you know, I remember when I was actually in high school, I didn't have a resume, although my nieces assured me that everybody in their high school who was out looking for summer employment did in fact have a resume, which I found pretty amazing. And I asked them, well, what's this with colored paper? And they said, oh, yeah, you know, neon, you know, orange, lime green, anything to make it stand out. And I thought, well, if I was hiring a high school kid for summer employment, I'm not sure that the lime green would do it for me. I think it would be more about content. But I don't know. What do you think about standing out amongst the 10,000 resumes that come in?
Well, it's really critical to stand out. And probably for a high school student, colored paper might do that. But, you know, it really depends on the type of job you're seeking. If you're seeking a job that's creative, you want it to be graphically interested, and that might mean colored paper, among other things, and that wouldn't be all it would mean. But if you're seeking an accountant, colored paper is the last thing you want, because you really don't want a creative, or at least not an accountant who's too creative. Off-white is about as far as you go.
Maybe with
if
that
you're an
little
accountant,
blue border around
you got it. So it really depends on the job.
Well, it depends on what, as Don said, what's in the back of the guy's eyelid. What's he looking for?
But you do need to stand out from among the crowd. So one way or another, sometimes you can do it by content. As I said, it should always be visually appealing. But colored paper may not be the way to stand out. I'm a big fan, if you can, if you have something to send along with your resume, to send that along, something that demonstrates what you do. So if you're in the art field, send some of your artwork. Reference a website where you have some of your photographs put up. So again, anything that's going to make you stand out in a positive way. One thing, of course, you don't want to do to stand out, and it will make you stand out, is to have typos or other mistakes, because that is the negative way to stand out that will guarantee you don't get that job interview.
Right. That's really important, is to ask your friends to look at your resume and just, even though you've already used spell check, ask your friends to take one more look and get their initial reactions. And if they're dead silent after they finish, you need to find out how come they're dead silent, because maybe they're just embarrassed to say something to you. And your friends will tell you the truth.
And spell check doesn't pick up all the mistakes, so you have to really
exactly
proofread it. So I always say, after you write your resume, take a break, give it a day, and then read it again very carefully to make sure there are no errors, because it's the first thing the employer looks at. If there are typos or other kinds of grammatical mistakes, that's the kiss of death to you getting that job interview.
I was also struck by Don telling us that one of the things that he found acceptable was to leave the date of your last employer open, even if you were no longer working for that employer. How did that strike you?
I didn't like that particularly. The key, however, is the resume, and as Don was very clear, you got to be honest, especially in the interview. You can't be at all coy or cagey about it. The resume, on the other hand, needs to get you in the door. So certain things can be a little more ambiguous, but certainly not so ambiguous that it would be deceptive, and I might have
right,
a little
problem
with
that.
Right,
and I think he made
that
clear, that
yeah,
we shouldn't be deceptive, and,
yeah,
and certainly I think you can always say that you're still, you know, providing service to a past employer, perhaps a little bit after your actual termination date, unless you were fired. There's a whole different set of circumstances that apply to someone who is relieved of their responsibilities rather than someone who quits.
Absolutely. And I really do like and do suggest to people that one of the ways you can deal with that is to get at least a part-time job so you have some current employment or even volunteer work. Something that is current at the top of your resume is very useful.
Or, as you suggest in your interviewing course, there are many of us who have had to leave jobs because of family obligations, taking care of an elderly parent, taking care of a sick child, and you just can't do your job and also fulfill your other responsibilities. So I think it's also okay to say, if you don't have a volunteer activity, to say that this was the situation, that's what you've been doing for the last 6 months, but the situation is resolved now. It's not going to be an issue in your next job. And you're ready to get back in the saddle. But I think there's a lot of respect that people have for those that fulfill obligations without hurting their employer.
I think that's absolutely right, although sometimes it's better to deal with that in person than
yes.
via a resume.
Yes. So my question for you, Lee, is have you ever responded to a blind ad when you don't know who the organization is?
Well, I can't say that I have personally, but I obviously know people who've done that and have actually put up blind ads in when I was an employer.
Why do employers do that?
Because we get barraged with calls, and we don't want to be barraged. You put in a blind ad if you're going to get lots of resumes, because, one, you don't want to have to respond to those resumes. If you're getting thousands of resumes, you don't want to have to send out letters, sorry, we're not interested, which is actually the polite and correct thing for employers to do. And you don't want to have these people constantly calling you, so that's why they use blind resumes.
So you know you're still going to get thousands of interviews, but this way it allows you to be rude. Is that what you're saying?
Basically, yes, because they don't know who you are.
So how do you tailor your resume? How do I know what's behind your eyelids if I don't know who you are?
Well, part of it's hard to do that. But you know what? Even when you send blind ads, there's enough information usually to figure out who the employer is, or if not who the employer is, at least what industry they're in. So it's not totally blind, and you can try to figure out what that employer has behind his eyelids.
Now, have you ever known somebody who replied to a blind ad who frankly found out that they were applying to their employer?
Actually, that's happened. It is very embarrassing for the employee. When I was an employer, I can think of at least one instance where we got a resume from somebody who was already employed by the company. So you have to be careful about that, and that's very tricky when you apply for blind ads. So you might use some of those when you're applying to blind ads, not revealing your own current employer and also not necessarily revealing your true name.
Well, even when it's not a blind ad, in a lot of communities, the community is small. I mean, you know, life is always a small place, even in New York City. And if an employer wants to check with a colleague of theirs at a different organization, they might very well say, hey, somebody who used to work for you is applying for a job. What can you tell me about Jean? How do you handle it when your boss comes up to you and says, hey, I heard you were applying for a job someplace else?
Well, that's a good time to be sure that you have an ability to renegotiate with your boss. It's either going to be a chance for you to say why you're looking for another job and why you're unhappy in your current job and try to make it into a positive experience, or you better be prepared to have that other job, because I've got to tell you, when employers find out you are looking for other employment, you know, they very often are looking for your replacement.
I actually found my assistant's resume on the top of her desk with a bunch of addresses she was sending it to one day, and I can suggest that she was not successful in negotiating her contract with me, which is a good thing that she was leaving because that was part of the problem, and it did speed up her departure. I mean, not because I fired her, but because
uncomfortable.
We didn't have much to say to
it. It's very uncomfortable to the employee. So unless, as an employer, you really love this employee and are trying to save that employee, you're going to speed their exit, and you should be immediately looking for their replacement.
But I think that does bring up an important thing. There's some ethics involved with looking for a job, and if you have a job, even if you hate it, and even if it's, you know, you made clear to the employer that this wasn't your career goal, it's important to give your current employer, you know, your full effort for the full day. You can't really be looking for the job on that employer's time or using their resources and their photocopy room to be printing out 50 copies of your resume. That's you have to own that responsibility, not on the job.
Yeah, and when you do use their photocopy, you inevitably leave a copy there. So that becomes the kiss of death as well.
Go to a copy shop. Lee, Don was kind enough to say that he was going to do a blog for our website and also to review our job seeker resume so people can get some tips by going to our website.
Yeah, we will actually be posting the before and after resumes of our Job Seeker 2006 with before Don's input and afterwards.
And you'll also see his input when he says, you know, use these words, change this paragraph around, or whatever he's going to say after he looks at Julia's resume. And while you're at the website, you can look for Don's books, and if they're interesting, you can click on them and put in your credit card, and Amazon.com will send them right along to you. And I think we're having a special on interviewing skills.
Yes, we're going to continue our special on interviewing skills, and we're going to continue because it's such a critical aspect of the job process. We're going to continue for another week offering the Interviewing Plus CD and online training course that I created with Barbara's help at only $79.
Great, and our friends at Macau will be pleased to offer their 100% satisfaction guarantee. But, Lee, do you have a career doctor's career prescription for us this week?
I certainly do.
What is it?
Tailor your resume to the job you want so that it's obvious, even from a very brief review of that resume, that you are the right candidate for this job.
Well, that's great, and you're the right candidate to be my partner, so I hope you'll come back next week.
I certainly will.
This has been your Career Doctors, Barbara Jackson and Lee Miller at Grapevine Radio. Thanks for listening, and remember, it's your life, your career, and your choice.